sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Two utterly contradictory things strike me as we begin another year together on the road, our arms outstretched and open to receive the future and the freedom God has given us in Jesus, who is our home. The first has to do with the vulnerability of a community that actually follows Jesus in a world such as ours. The Book of Order of the Presbyterian Church says the church is called to follow Jesus, even at the risk of losing its life, trusting God alone as the author and giver of life. I think very few churches live second contradictory thing has to do with the inner security experienced by an itinerant community whose dwelling place and destiny are the love that God is. What then to make of our vulnerability as followers of Jesus Christ and members of His church? You can say that vulnerability is the human condition of creatures who have been given the gift of mortal life. Yet our lives are determined in part by how we respond to our mortality. How much of our life we spend simply trying not to die. From the beginning, Jesus pulled no punches with the 12 when he spoke about being vulnerable to the death-dealing powers all around him. Three times he tells them he is going up to Jerusalem, where he will be handed over to religious and civil authorities, mocked, flogged, and killed. Only then will he rise on the third day from the dead. Only then will death no longer have power to separate us from the love that God is. But he is also saying that those who choose to follow him, that they too will find themselves, literally find themselves, as they walk straight into the clutches of the death-dealing powers of the world for the sake of the gospel. He is saying, "I am on my way to defeat death's grip on you, so that you will not have to spend your life saving your life, playing it safe, hedging your bets, hunkering now, securing the future, arguing with each other along the way about who is the greatest and the first." Or as Annie Dillard put our post-resurrection lives, "You can walk fearlessly, eating what you must, growing wherever you can, like the monk on the road who knows precisely how vulnerable he is, who takes no comfort among death-forgiving men." The first rule of the road is to live fearlessly in the face of death, following him whose love has defeated death. The second rule of the road, Jesus says, you will find yourself along the way, again, literally find yourself, as you receive the most vulnerable into your vulnerable outstretched arms. I think this is what Jesus meant when he took a weak child into his outstretched arms and said to the disciples, "Whoever receives one such child in my name receives not me, but the one who sent me." It is no coincidence that the word for child in Mark's that children rank just above slaves and just below women in the social order. Women, children, slaves, all of them not quite human. When a child emerged from the mother's womb, the father stood at a distance considering whether or not to take the child in his arms. Think Joseph taking Jesus as his own. If the father refused the child, if the child appeared to be of no use for the family's economic future, the child likely would be put out as garbage to be picked up or not by a stranger. And then would raise the child for a profit as a slave or prostitute or victim. As you might imagine, it'd be girls who were the most vulnerable of all. And even though children were a blessing from God for the Jews, Jesus' admonition implied that there was room for growth. Speaking of room for growth, I'm asking myself presently on the road with Jesus, what of a non-white child seeking refuge in the 21st century Euro-American culture? Specifically, what stranger stretched out arms will ever receive 1,200 vulnerable and indefinitely detained youth seeking refuge in this country? And when will 497 children still separated from their parents at the border be held again by parents' outstretched arms? All week I have not been able to silence Ted Hearn's relentless chant, renewed by the crossing in four sold-out concerts last week, one here, three in New York City. The chant, these aren't people, these are animals, these aren't people, these are animals, these aren't people, these are animals, these aren't people, these are animals. I can't get that out of my head. The singers chanted amid animal sounds until one voice remained. The voice of a child crying, "Papa! Papa! Now she is doing the same for refugees in Lyon, and she manages communications for IKEA in Southern Europe. The second rule of the road, Jesus says, we will find ourselves, literally find our human selves, as we receive the most vulnerable into our outstretched arms. But Jesus says something more than 12. It begins to get the paradox, the kind of contrariness of the security given to those who dwell in Christ's love, even as they leave home to follow him. This gets to the third rule of the road. No matter where you are along the way, make your home in his love. Not by chance, the root meaning of ethics, I'm thrilled to tell you this, the root meaning of ethics is dwelling, or strong, and so stability. Ethics, according to Christian Ethicist Paul Lehmann, has to do with the stability and security which are necessary if one is going to act at all. The stability and security indispensable to the living of human life. So, from one perspective, it suddenly occurs to me as I'm reading this, the stability and security we need will be given to us as we close our borders. There is an argument to be made for that. But the security and stability which are necessary if one is going to act at all, ethics, the stability and security indispensable to the living of human life, just may lead us elsewhere. The security we are given when we dwell in his love, and so act out of his love, is not reducible to a static, monolithic, immovable set of absolutes that we can grasp. It is a love whose breadth and length and height and depth is a process that every turn around. The road that is being contrary to all that you choose or contrive or desire, that is the road you must take, Martin Luther heard Jesus say to him. To that I call you, and in that you must be my disciple. As they walked on the road to Capernaum with Jesus, the disciples had been arguing about which one was the greatest along the way. When they came to Capernaum, Jesus asked them what they had been arguing about. I imagine we would be as silent as they were if Jesus asked us that right now. Then he sat down, called them to him, and said, whoever wants to be first must be last of all and serve of all. Brian said it so much better than I'm about to say it. And pardon my sexism for a sentence or two. As I say on behalf of the crowd, it took a real man then, and it takes a real man now to be last of all and serve of all. I'm sure the disciples had already left their literal homes and families to follow Jesus. No doubt they were already feeling pretty low on the totem pole of status in early Palestine. But suddenly that seemed like the easy part. Now Jesus was asking them to leave the social constructs which secured their identity in first century Palestine. I do not know what these constructs look like exactly, but I'm pretty sure they did not look up before following a suffering servant who would be arrested, tortured, and killed because the people he loved and the way he loved them threatened the social order. Put another way, when the disciple of this Messiah was going to require them to trust that who they were had everything to do with the love to whom they belonged in life and in death. It was going to involve dying to the arrogant self, the braggadocious self, the ungracious self, if they were talking about along the way. It was going to entail taking their place at the end of the line, even behind society's so-called losers. For Christ's sake. In sum, the disciples' security and identity from now on would be in loving as they had been loved by him who was on the way to lay down his life for them. Love creates vulnerability, and love constitutes the security of those who follow Jesus. I had the privilege this week of spending time with Elmarie Parker, our denomination's liaison in Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq. Elmarie spends much of her time leading groups from churches like ours to visit with churches whose vulnerability would defy our imaginations. At a presbytery gathering on Tuesday, she told a story that held in solution the gospel I am so inadequately trying to proclaim to you this morning. She and a small group from a church in Ohio had come to a border crossing between Lebanon and Syria. The Syrian border guard, a Muslim, after he checked passports and visas, knew that he was dealing with a group of Christians. He paused, looked up, and said to them, "Let me tell you why Christians must stay in Syria and the Middle East. It is the way in which the church shares love that is the healing medicine for the nation. The way the church shares love that is the healing medicine for the nation. May the way this church shares love more and more become healing medicine for this nation."